Greetings, friends. Welcome back to the Film Alchemist Podcast. I'm your host, Griffey, here for a brief introduction before today's continuing journey through the Viewisk universe. Everyone, if you would be so kind, go to patreon.com/filmalchemistpod. It's the best way to support the show. It's the best way to help shows like us continue to grow and be the best we can be. Thank you in advance for those of you who are already going over to patreon.com/filmalchemistpod. This month particularly is a really great month to join because that's where you get our Jay and Silent Bob feature-length commentary coming up next week. That's also where you get our Patreon-exclusive Mallrats episode. So if you're going to do the Viewisk universe with us, let's go. You don't want to miss those two movies. So go to patreon.com/filmalchemistpod. We have a huge Patreon-exclusive episode library that our Patreons actually get a vote on what movies they want to enter that club. We do feature-length commentaries every month. We got miniseries. Right now, we're working on a Tales from the Crypt miniseries. It's been amazing. So if you guys would be so kind, please head over there. Help us grow this thing into a behemoth. We appreciate it. The YouTube is Film Alchemist. You can subscribe over there. See some videos of what we're working on. We're on all the social media you're on, including TikTok now. You can see clips of the show and some content we're making specifically for that. So we'd love to see you over at TikTok as well. The email for the show, filmalchemistpod@gmail.com. Make sure you're leaving 5-star ratings and reviews wherever you find the show. These are all great ways to help out the pod. If you would be so kind, we would appreciate it. Speaking of appreciating it, today we are rejoined by our dear friend, comic book artist extraordinaire, Jay Rollins. Jay, the king of the month, J-April, on our calendar every year. He decided this year he wanted to do the Viewisk universe. You will hear Jay in this episode today tell you that today's movie Dogma is the best Kevin Smith movie ever made. When I rewatched it and we talked about it, it's a very compelling case. It's hard not to agree. It's Kevin wrestling with his religion. It's a little bit more mature of a movie than some of his other movies. The production value is insane. The cast is wonderful. Maybe it's because the three of us were all Midwestern boys who grew up in various churches. This movie really hits on a lot of levels for all of us, man. So a wonderful movie, a wonderful discussion. So glad to have Jay. So glad to finally be paying homage to our personal filmmaking hero, Kevin Smith, this month. So again, I hope that you guys enjoy this episode. I hope that you'll be kind enough to go find Jay online at Jay Rollins Art. Everywhere on the internet that we all are. He's a wonderful guy. And I hope you enjoy this episode on Dogma. Welcome back, everyone. Our continued journey through the Viewisk universe, joined again by our dear friend, comic book artist extraordinaire, Jay Rollins. Welcome back.
Hey.
Jay has found a loophole in the Film Alchemist system, and he's entering pod heaven. As today we talk about Dogma. If you've been listening to the Viewisk journey, I hope you're enjoying it. Make sure to go to patreon.com/filmalchemistpod to hear Mallrats and the next film, a feature-length commentary of Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back. That was a super fun one. I made the case on Chasing Amy. I made the case that I think it is the quintessential Kevin Smith movie. I think if you go through, I think it was the best he had gotten out of casting. I think it's when his writing found a little more grounding, right? So his kind of verbosity that was tripping up some scenes in Mallrats, it kind of found this perfect, sublime middle ground. And like Holden, I think he had something personal to say. And I also am a guy that just thinks indie aesthetic Kevin Smith adds a lot to what he does. All that said, we then watch Dogma. I think you could make a good case, as I think you guys are about to unleash on me, that I may in fact be wrong and that Dogma is the best Kevin Smith movie in the Viewisk universe. I mean, not even Viewisk universe. I fucking love Tusk and Red State, I think, is his most underappreciated movie.
I think Red State's good. Tusk is watchable.
I mean, it hits a certain weirdness that I really love, right? There are not a lot of movies in that genre, and I'm glad when we get them. So, Jay, I'd like to toss it to you to start, man. Do you think Dogma is the pinnacle of the Viewisk universe, and why?
Yes, absolutely. And it's because it's everything he makes is personal, but this one is the most personal.
Well said. Well said.
It's got everything that makes his work great. Like Bartleby and Loki fighting, yelling at each other about "you sound like the Morning Star" and blah 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 blah. That is a much better version of the after the hockey fight in Chasing Amy. It's shot more dynamically. It is. It's shot more dynamically. It's got. I mean, both of them have Ben Affleck, so he had prep for it. But it's got Ben Affleck and Matt Damon, who like undoubtedly can't help but have chemistry together.
Mm-hmm.
So it's also got that aspect that he's always done a really good job of, having two best friends who are assuredly not gay. they always have to say that.
Yeah, when you take the dicks out, it becomes a little easier, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then the twist in Chasing Amy was one of them maybe is gay. But like he does,
as we find out next week, 100% gay.
It has much more scope than anything else does too, because although we end up in New Jersey eventually, it's a road trip, which is just always Jade Zella Pops does that too, where like it takes this road trip aspect. It's all of his sauce mixed together in just like a perfect little way. And I think it was very personal, because Alex was talking about this, that it's he was having a crisis of faith and he just wanted to get it out, type it out, see what was going on.
Yeah.
I don't know what conclusion he came to, if I'm honest, but.
Well, I think he came to the logical conclusion. All three of us were kind of like Midwestern guys raised in the church. And I kind of love where this movie sits, where it's just a normal guy grappling with these impossibly big questions that, you know, every philosopher and great thinker of all time have had to wrestle with. And I think that kind of just normal guy and what does this mean in my everyday fucking life? It's actually a much more relatable and a way to engage with these kind of talks, right? Like all of us have been in a bar and had the talks about God and this and that. And I think bringing it from that loftier kind of, you know, well, at a base level, what does this mean to the existence of man? And this lady's just like, do I have to call in sick to work? Like, I think that really is a pretty good place for this to start, man. I think you could make the case this is the best writing he's ever done. That the script for this one is just really interesting and strong throughout. Alex, what were your kind of opening thoughts? Where do you stand on, is this the pinnacle Kevin Smith movie?
I think it's really hard because you want Chasing Amy to be the best Kevin Smith movie, because it's about all these things that are so deeply personal to him. And I think because when you grow up with him, because of Mallrats and Clerks, it seems like Chasing Amy would be the thing that is like the most important to him.
Yeah, but you're not a high school boy anymore. Now you're entering the real world.
Right. And but I, like, it's hard because I'm of two minds about it. While Chasing Amy is this movie that feels very, because I agree, I think Kevin Smith, indie aesthetic Kevin Smith, is top notch. Like there's no beating that in a lot of ways. But this really is like the best Kevin Smith pedigree movie. I don't know what else
to say other than
just like production value's high. Everyone is performing the shit out of the script that is also written impeccably, because I agree. I actually think that that's the best way to put it. This is a movie with lofty ideas that don't really seem that lofty after a while. Like it seems actually kind of logical in a lot of ways about how to argue or have these conversations. And I think that's something only Kevin Smith can do a lot of the time. Kevin Smith is the only person who can bring this kind of enormous conversation down to the size that makes sense. And I think that's what Dogma does better than any other movie about the conceit of religion, or particularly Catholicism in this case.
Yeah, it is this interesting, right? Because the setup of the movie essentially, and this is our first Carlin movie with Kevin Smith, so that's another like good achievement. But the unveiling of the Buddy Christ and "We Want the Church to Be Cool Again," it's just fucking hilarious. And I love the idea of this this fucking asshole who's like, I need a marketing scheme. And all of a sudden he could undo all of existence. And it feels like what happens when you as an almighty creator fucking put something in your book that says whatever you do on Earth, I'm cool with that. Right, I'll back you up. So there is kind of an inevitability to this. This is the silly outcome. And again, I think taking the piss out of it, like, weirdly makes sense as you get older, right? That this doesn't feel like, you know, there's always that, you know, what is it? Intelligent design. Like, something put us here for a purpose. And I think more days than not, the rest of us are like, really? Does this feel that fucking thought out? Like, you just go through your day and your behavior like, so I'm laying in a closet jerking off so my kids won't accidentally come in. And that's like part of a grand purpose. Like, that's important to something somewhere. And I think this movie just, you want to have these talks, but you feel too stupid and inadequate to do it. Dogma.
Yeah.
I think that's a wonderful place for this to exist.
Jason Lee kind of like hits it on the head where it's like, the church is run by people. We're going to say that if the church is run by people and it's also right, this whole if there's a papal sanction, then it is true because God's son fucked up and like was like, yeah, any rules you want.
God's up in heaven like.
But Jason Lee says that he'd been lying in wait for thousands of years for one of the factions to fuck up and give him a window. He just knew eventually we were going to do something selfish enough to end the world.
Well, and I think it's a good thing. Again, this is why it's so hard, because this is really personal to Kevin Smith. Because Kevin Smith is, you know, I wouldn't call him a lapsed Catholic, but I think everybody's sort of a lapsed Catholic at one point.
Well, he is still religious.
He is, but it is like one of those things where, like, you know, I feel like everyone who had Catholicism in their life, you're like, yeah, I don't know about all that. But
a lot of commitments on the Catholic calendar.
Yeah.
I like the book. I like the story, like, but I don't want to be at a church 3 days a week. Come
Selma Hayek's character says it best. She's like, leave it to the Catholics. And you're like, there you go.
Leave it to the
like, this is a great indictment of like, we shouldn't be mourning the fact that, you know, Jesus died for our sins. We should be celebrating these things. I'm like, let's just not be that guy. All right. You know, it's a very strange.
Well, to be fair, there aren't a lot of great victory laps for the modern Catholic Church, right? You got to take them where
I see. And I think that's the other thing, too, is this also came out before it got real bad. I mean, it's always been bad.
This was
before
the pre-Spotlight era. This is when Spotlight reporters were running around beating the
band.
This
is when Spotlight reporters were
already knew about it. It's like Michael Jackson, where in 2003 they were like, he what?
Yeah, that's right.
Again, like,
wait, he has a mattress in his amusement park? That seems unusual.
A documentary almost 20 years later to people be like, again, they were like, he what?
Yeah.
That's what the people kept doing with the Catholic Church.
Yeah. Not my Catholic Church. That must be in another town.
Can we talk about Bethany for a second?
Oh, please.
Her character is... Okay, so in the beginning, she claims that she has a crisis of faith. But every single time... So, like, Rufus... This is just one example. But Rufus is just like, I was left out of the Bible because I'm a black man. And then she says, I've been Catholic my whole life, and I've never heard of a 13th apostle named Rufus. Bitch, I just said I was taken out of the Bible. What?
You don't have a crisis of faith. You have a crisis of listening, Bethany.
Just that's listen. What's going on. And then she's talking to the fucking Metatron. Yeah. Or no, this is still Rufus. And Rufus says that Jesus had brothers and sisters. And she's just like, Mary was a virgin. He's like, I know more than you.
Yeah.
Would you?
I was there. I was fucking there.
And it's interesting you bring that up, because I like that. Like, Bethany is this great, besides being the main character of the movie, she is this great avatar for, like, just religious church-going folks who are like, listen, I've read the good book several times. I know a lot. And it's like, excuse me.
I was there.
You're talking to the people who are in the Bible, or were written out of the Bible, for that matter.
Yeah.
Don't be that guy. Just listen.
Settle down, abortionist, right?
I'm also not going to go too hard about this, but I, like...
Settle down.
Biblical history is, like, one of my hobbies. I like it. I think it's fun. And it says in the Bible that Jesus has brothers. It says it in there. It's just that they stopped talking about it. Jesus' brother is James. It says it in Luke. His name is James.
I thought this was like a figurative. He's a brother to all.
If you're an actual Catholic and you're like a priest, priests know about this. Jesus did have brothers and sisters. It was not taken out of the Bible. People just stopped talking about it.
Yeah.
That's it.
Priests are good about that, burying the lead. That's what they
did. Yeah, I was going to say, damn it, I was just about to say.
It reminds me of, yeah, those kids who are like on TikTok with their fan theories of Game of Thrones and George R.R. Martin's like, do you want a book signed? Can you get the fuck out of my line? Like, all I get it. I wrote it.
All of Catholicism and how they read the Bible is about burying the lead.
God is like George R.R. Martin, and he's just tired of our fan theories. That's what we learn in this movie. I mean, I do. It is kind of a, again, there is a flippancy to how we talk about it. This movie exists in a really weird area where the gravity of the conversations they're having, I feel like the movie earns the discussions it's having, right? There's also just a base flippancy to, like, God created all this shit. God is all-powerful, all-knowing, omnipotent. Nothing can really happen that, you know, he doesn't preordain, right? The myth of free will. I also love the idea of that version of God that we've always heard about, right? Which is where a lot of the sticking points, I think, come for those of us that eventually turn on religion hard, right?
Yeah.
They're like bad things of the world. You're like, well, God knew this. God wrote that in fucking pen. He knew exactly what was happening. Right. I love the idea of God as just like this being. And he's like, you know what? Sometimes I just got to go to the shore and play skee ball. Like, I know I'm all powerful and shit, but this is hard. This is harder than I thought. And I'm going to go fucking take a break. I think there is a downtroddenness to everyone in the movie. Because I think if you play the religious characters, right? Like the abstracts, like the Metatron and the Muse, the angels, the demons, if they're all playing in this, religion is perfect and infallible, right? I don't think this movie can function. But what we really get is all these religious creatures, right? These creatures that existed before us. We almost had, like, they were the first draft, and God was like, I'm not stoked about that. Which, again, is weird for an all-powerful being. But I think even watching the Metatron, he's like, you know, a store manager at a Target. Yeah, where some lady's like, no, but I have a coupon. He's like, dude, I don't know what to do. I'm just here. I do the job as best I can. I get on the loudspeaker. Like, come on, man. And I think there is a base level that even the heavenly creatures do this. Well, who knows, man? It's messy. It's always fucking messy that allows, you know, characters like Jay and Silent Bob, frankly, to exist in the middle of this fucking holy crusade.
It'll be funny because Jay does not name himself as a prophet, which is what the Metatron said he was going to do. He said, I could go back to Red Bank and kick the shit out of little kids in Red Bank and make myself a prophet. It'd be really funny if she just if she was wrong.
Would she be the first prophet who didn't nail it? Also, you just established that Bethany has a listening problem.
She's like, oh, I found the prophets. And he's like, who the fuck are these guys?
Yeah, Rufus is like, wait, what? The Metatron comes back. He's like, oh, God, the apple's fallen far from the tree. But she knew that Jay and Bob had that stink spray. That was the moment that you knew that God's hand was involved.
Just skip ahead for a second. The clerks too. What's his name? The little religious kid,
Elias.
Elias.
Elias has no idea that these are actual prophets of God, and he needs to.
Every day he looks out the drive-through menu. His day, Jay has his dick tucked in, saying, "Would you fuck me?" And he doesn't realize he's walking with heavenly royalty right there.
I think Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back should have had a little bit of Bethany just like saying that she is that her child is the second coming of Jesus and like trying to write a new book and like everybody thinks she's fucking crazy.
She's out there looking like the Unabomber and they're like, yeah, society turns on you hard once you put it out there.
She just winds up a Westboro Baptist person.
That's what Red State was about. She was the old lady in Red State. We just didn't realize
it. We just didn't realize it. Red State's technically the sequel to Dogma.
You know, yeah, it should have been. The original ending to Red State was going to be that the horns go off and then it really is the apocalypse. I think he said that he just didn't have the budget for it or whatever, but that would have been an amazing ending.
It's also hard, dude. I've written a religious horror movie or two. It's always that hard turn at the end, right? Like, I was writing this movie once about this guy who essentially, he comes from like a lineage of witch hunters. And there's a moment where you see people doing stuff like that in modern times, right? Like kidnapping women, whatever, this and that. it's fun as a movie to go, what if they were witches? But then you have to stop as the writer and be like, oh, God, I'm saying that guy was right. Like, that guy was doing the right things, right? And so Red State becomes hard if you say the fucking gun-packing militants who have been doing these weird chapel churches are actually, like, on the right path.
Well, that's in a that tough case, landing it's to like stick. he kills the guy who's the head of the church.
Yeah.
And so he was right that the world was coming to an end. He wasn't right about what to do about it.
As Rufus said, right? You just got to have a good idea. Don't get locked in the fucking biblical doctrines.
Don't get locked
in
your faith.
It's
a good idea.
I think that's why he doesn't have God talk. Sorry.
Yeah. Go ahead. No, I agree. I think that's the value of the movie, though, is I know that, like, the Rufus conversation, I think, is a great, and again, this is what's so good about the movie. It's a great middle point of the movie, is you are steeped in this as hated terminology, mythology, but it is a really important and valuable moment to have that conversation about, like, what was Jesus like? Because to that point, like, everybody is just huge. Like, these pillars, you're like, that's an apostle. Holy shit, it's the voice of God. Like, all these things that have, like, you know, just world consequences in a way that I don't think anybody can really grasp, to have, like, a very common and relaxed conversation about not only Jesus, because, again, Jesus was just a dude. Like, it's not like, I understand he's the Son of God and the Holy Trinity because
that's
I went
to Catholic.
That's
a great point. What this movie does is very humanizing to religion,
humanizing.
Right? Because then you think of the Metatron and angels and all these people, right? And we'll talk about the ending specifically. God, you know, playing skee ball and fucking, you know, cartwheel or somersaulting around a church's grass. There is a point where these things become so lofty, right? And it's like, isn't the point of Jesus is that he came down to be one of us? Yeah. Right? Otherwise, why didn't God send down, like, a fully formed, like, fucking jacked, right? Like, you know, Monkey Man. Why didn't Jesus come down like that and fucking then he whoops the money changer's ass, breaks the fucking cross? No, he came down because he was supposed to live amongst us for a while. It's crazy to think that this kind of sanitized, sanded down version of Jesus that we all are taught about, what was the point of him coming here and living as a man for, what was it, 27, 30 years, whatever the fuck it is?
33.
If not to experience some of that human bullshit. Right.
I think this is another thing that Kevin Smith did with the movie that is so wonderful and so powerful, is that everybody kind of disagrees with the whole, like, why did you send a kid to do this? Not okay. Like, even the Metatron's like, listen.
That scene when he tells Bethany, he's like, I had to tell this to a kid once, that you were going to die for
really
all.
That really touches
Like, that's a great fucking scene.
It's a
and
great
Rickman walking.
Scene.
I mean, Alan Rickman is... To my taste, right? The funniest guy Kevin Smith ever had in a movie was Carlin. The best actor Kevin Smith ever had in a movie was Alan Rickman. He's so fucking good in this movie. And him walking across the water as Bethany's giving a good performance, like, I can't fucking handle the weight of this, right? The every man kind of story comes crashing down around her. And she's like, this is fucking... Like, there are children in India that are going to die. They don't even know that we're playing in these big games. This is a fucking lot to... take in. And Rickman just gives that, like, man, Jesus was also like a scared human being. And I think it is this, what the movie does really well, right? I don't believe in any of this shit, right? But what it does is it says, if you believe in it, it's crazy to take the human element out of it. And I think that's
exactly
like kind of the real sweet spot he found in this movie.
I love everybody in this movie is essentially like, listen, it's okay to be human. Like, it's like Jesus was.
Yes, why
human.
Do we have so many built-in flaws and deficiency? That's by design, not by accident, right?
And I think that was so, like, when Metatron's like, listen, if I could have taken it back, I totally would have. Like, this is such an unfair thing to ask.
See, that moment,
a child.
Too, that is the right-hand man of God saying he doesn't agree with God.
He's like, I don't agree with God.
The
like,
angels don't agree
okay.
with God. The muse doesn't like, always agree
it's
with
such
God.
A, like, and it humanizes
That's an important element of the movie,
an
too.
Angel. Yeah, absolutely. So,
but you still do your duty because the entire universe gets destroyed if God is wrong.
Right.
Well, see, that's the thing. The movie has this like weird hiccup, and it's kind of the weird hiccup of all of religion, right? Which is, God is all powerful, and we have to always accept that everything is right and decided and blah, blah. I love that this movie exists in that there is this drama of will it or won't it. Not just because it's a movie, but because God is infallible. We know those angels are never walking through that fucking cross.
Yeah.
If Bethany stops her journey, we know that nothing is going to happen, right? I think the movie still finds the drama in that we can see that sometimes it's not right. It might all work out in the end, but why her? Why are we disrupting her whole life? Why are we impregnating her with a fucking baby? Right? You know, like there's some wild shit that happens. And I think that those big unknowable, like what the fuck moments are tied just with, you're never going to understand. You're never going to know. And I think that gets back to why you can't have God talk. It's one of those like movie moments that movies set themselves up at the end of a movie where the characters in the movie can never deliver a moment powerful enough to close the story. Like there's no line of dialogue that a normal man like Kevin Smith could have written that would sound appropriate coming out of God's mouth in that moment.
Yeah.
And so he does the smart thing, which is just let God is this like ultimate creep boop her on the nose. And that's it. Go roll around in her like half a David Bowie outfit. And you're like, well, that's fucking terrifying. But yeah, that's what it feels like.
Yeah. And that's kind of what I like is that they don't necessarily even say God is right. They just say like, these are the rules. This is how it works. I don't know.
God's not right. Like, it's God's God book.
if you disagree with God, God is all of this. All of this was made by God and all of this is God, et cetera, et cetera. And so, yeah, just like God is a dictator, but she's more or less nice now.
But you're hoping he's one of those noble dictators that has bread at circuses. Yeah.
She was really mean when everything started, but not like really calmed down after a few thousand years. First billion years or so when it was just him and the angels, it was real rough. He'd come home drunk and he would smack us around a little bit. But as soon as he had a kid, he really chilled out.
He had kids. He didn't want. He starts raining.
Came home and Goodwill Hunting dust. Goodwill Hunting dust for a while.
You know what? I think this movie has only after he met.
It was only after he met Robin Williams that he calmed down.
Yeah, right. I think the movie's secret weapon
and a knife and say choose. I chose the crucifix because fuck him. That's why.
Because fuck him. That's why. It's not your fault, Jesus. I know. It's not your. Not you.
It's
too,
not
Will.
Your fault.
Not you too.
It's not your fault, son.
It's not your fault.
Okay, Grippy.
What
what's the secret weapon?
In Jesus' house, when you spill paint on the garage floor, look at it.
Oh yeah, then he shows his stigmata wounds on his hand. This
That's
what
fucking harsh.
Yeah. Jesus was fucking harsh, yo.
Jesus was fucking harsh.
But again,
okay, Griffey, what's the secret
I
weapon?
I think the secret weapon of the movie is that I think the movie is specifically telling us that God is not infallible, right? That a God who had to cleanse human beings off the face of the earth twice, whose angels want to leave heaven to go, you know, city of angels around and just eat and fuck and all that kind of stuff, work at strip clubs, that Rufus didn't make it in the Bible, that we still don't understand Jesus, and that God's taking breaks to play skee balls and can get beat up by teenagers with hockey sticks. I think the movie is trying to tell us that God is infallible thing, that that's one of Rufus's don't believe it word for word, just have a good idea. God is the all-powerful being in this universe, as they say, right? There's also no mention of any other world religions, right? Like, what do Hindu people think when this is all happening, right? How does this affect them? Why has God let these other fucking religions crop up, right? I think the movie gives a really good leeway to religious folk, which is God is not infallible. They're just all powerful, right? So even though this was a predetermined thing that they were not going through because God's not going to let that happen, I think the movie gives us every chance as people to say, take that infallibility shit out, right? That God can never be wrong. And doesn't that solve almost every single problem people have with religion? Doesn't that solve the childhood cancer thing? Doesn't that solve all this, like, you know, war and famine and shit? Because if there is an all-powerful God, it makes our world really fucking hard to accept at times. And I think the movie's showing us that it's not always that clean. The angels want to leave heaven but still pine for him all the time, right? I think they're... Secretly, I think the movie's writing in flaws, which humanize and make it much more palatable.
God did. So I think that the moral of this movie is, forget all that. Enjoy your ideas. It gives us some leeway on whether or not the things in the Bible are literally true, because Rufus says
Yeah, they tell us they're
they
not
changed
because of
it.
Rufus.
They cut it out. And then Muse says, I inspired people to write the truth, and they fudged some stuff and they said it their own way. I told them God was a woman. Not a single one of them wrote that down. So what else did they miss out on? But mostly the moral of this movie is it's pretty fucking nice here on Earth, even when the crazy shit happens. It is perfect up in heaven, but so many ethereal beings want to hang out here, including God himself. It is fun here. I think God likes us because of our flaws is a big part of this. He will, I think this is something that Loki didn't understand, is that God punished his angels because they're supposed to be perfect. He likes us because we're interesting.
Yeah, it is interesting. God had to institute a no drinking rule for angels. Like, God's just like, you know what? I'm going to add keggers to heaven and there will be no repercussions for that. Like, God couldn't pontificate on what a kegger would turn into. No one's ever been at a kegger where some shit didn't go down and friendships were broken. That just happens
Well,
every
I'm more
time.
like that. I like that the consequence, but like how it got there. He's like, well, he threw down his fiery sword and gave God the finger, and therefore we can't drink anymore. I was like, dude, that's all it took? He didn't even
That's
whip his
all
dick
it
out.
took.
Like, he didn't even whip his mound out. That's not cool.
I just killed thousands of people for you and I can't flip you off. That seems
I can't give you
insane.
the finger and whip my mound out, rub fronts. Like,
And
what's your
what's the
problem?
punishment for God's fucking right hand archangel? Wisconsin.
Wisconsin.
Prehistoric Wisconsin, nonetheless.
Yeah, that's always like so that's Wisconsin before anything. So that's like before any tectonic shifts, everything. He's
No.
just
This
in
was it was right
Wisconsin.
after the plagues of Egypt, so it was 4,000 years ago. It's
Yeah,
not that
okay,
long.
cool.
There was Native Americans there.
There were mammoths and
Right,
shit
okay.
running around, maybe. That would be the difference.
I'm not a
4,000 years ago, mammoths? No.
I'm not
You
a
don't
carbon
think?
dater person.
No, that's like ancient
Oh, brother,
Egypt.
dude.
No
Have you
mammoths.
ever?
Oh,
okay.
Apparently, you haven't been up on your Nat Geo with your ancient aliens and ancient X-Files, dude. There's a lot of shit that we don't have answers for. But I have ideas, as the
I've
movie
got my
tells
own
me.
little fan theory. Again, I do. So I got into biblical history because of a religious guy I knew, and I read up on the Bible so that I could like get his ass.
It's
And
the
then I
best
just
way to
started
learn things
really
for
interested
revenge.
in
You
the history
spite
of
read
it.
so wait, you spite read the Bible?
Yeah, spite read the Bible, spite
Is there
read
another
like
way?
biblical historians and stuff, just so that I could have him on like, the exact dates of like Mark was written in 80 AD,
Well done.
Luke was blah 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 written together. But so I have a fan theory for this movie about why they have no dicks, and it's based on First Enoch in the Book of the Watchers. In First Enoch, which was taken out of the Bible, the angels come down and they have sex with a bunch of human women, and they
Awesome.
create the
There's Zeus
Nephilim.
in it.
And God punishes them by creating the flood. It's like a like the other side of the flood story. Like an angel comes down on the other
Oh,
side of the
dude.
world and
It
tells
was flooding
Moses,
all
like, by
right.
the way, there's a flood, and I'm pretty sure it's your fault, but it was really the
Yeah.
angels.
The angels banged
And
a
so
bunch
I
of
think,
ladies on top of Mount Sinai and it
is this
flooded
what
down in
Aronofsky's
one
Noah is
breath.
about?
Maybe. So
Female ejaculate flooded the town. The sheep were
this
screaming.
God. This version of God will make it so you can imbibe alcohol if somebody gives them the finger. I think he took all their dicks away when the
Well,
Book of
the
the
other
Watchers
thing that
happened.
happens at keggers is sexual escapade. So that makes perfect sense. A heavenly rager that just turned into the first orgy. God's like, oh, it smells in here. There's cleanup
This
for a
movie
week.
actually answers a lot of questions about like Preacher. Like, so now we know exactly how that
So what you're
happened.
saying is that God is just the dean of the college that does double secret probations in Animal House. Now it all starts to add
God
up a
is
lot.
Dean Wormer
And Metatron's
of
like,
Faber
what's double
College.
secret probation? Shut up. Like, now it all makes perfect sense.
God is the Dean Wormer of Faber College, and Faber College is existence. And the
I mean,
angels are Animal House.
I do think that's fascinating too. I used to do a lot of religious. I was one class away from having a women's study and religious study minor in college just because you're filling out your schedule and you're like, what seems like an interesting class? And I just started taking all these bullshits.
You thought I hate women and the Bible. Let's see what I can
How
do.
fucking dare you? How
Oh,
dare you?
I love women. I have all their albums. All right.
I was into women before it was cool, dude. First, I was a woman hipster. I owned the Barbie Girl CD. I was in there early, dude. Me and Aqua.
Really? Aqua?
I used to shoot hoops to that with no shirt on, thinking that my neighbor girl would let me finger her. I had it on my boombox, that big 90s boombox we all would get for one Christmas. And I would blast Barbie Girl while just raining jump shots. And I was convinced that the neighbor girl, J.C. Crouch, who was called J.C. Crotch, was going to let me finger her because she saw me shooting hoops to Barbie Girl.
Wait a second. There's a girl named J.C. Crotch, and you're claiming feminism off this right now?
Well, her name was Crouch, but everyone called her Crotch.
No, I get the nickname. That's not the problem.
I did it because I was a respectful young man.
This is Kevin Smith feminism for sure. You're not finger cuffs to me.
Yeah. To me, you're not.
There it is. There it is right there.
I just wanted her to pretend I was the only one she watched shoot jump shots. That's all I wanted. Okay, so we got to talk, too. We haven't gotten to all the characters yet. I think you could make a great case.
It's time to talk about the movie.
That's right. Rotten Crotch. I think you can make the case, right? This is the greatest Jay and Silent Bob movie.
Mm-hmm.
Even better than Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back. I think they are the most effectively deployed in this movie.
He knew what to do because they
are perfection in this
R2-D2 movie. And C-3PO in this movie.
Yeah.
Yes.
They're so funny.
They're hilarious. They're perfect. They actually find moments where they can exist in the world without the one-liners. I think this is the best Jay and Silent Bob movie.
I would say even like that diner scene is really kind of a perfect encapsulation of all the things you actually need from Jay and Silent Bob in a movie, plus what they need to do for Dogma. So it's this great comedic relief from what I think we're all assuming is about to be a very heady, like sort of dramatic religious experience a little bit.
Coming off Chasing Amy, you think it's going to be oh, here we go.
You think it's going to be, oh boy, all right. And then instead it's literally like, hey, is it true girls fart if you blast them in the ash? Like, wow. Okay. Yeah. Well, this is the movie we're watching.
She starts replaying. She's like, maybe Jay's right. Maybe they didn't say prophets.
It's the one thing after watching Chasing Amy that I think he missed a trick on was Bob being way up on the like ecumenical history of the church. And like somebody doesn't understand and he's just like, well, blah, blah, blah. Like he just gives a whole thing and then he just goes, or whatever. I might be fucked. And then he's just done talking. But
yeah, his line in the movie is no ticket.
No ticket.
Yeah. It's Indiana Jones.
Yeah, I fucking love, but like even the end when Bob is the one that goes and finds Bethany and brings her back, I was like, it's fun to see Jay and Silent Bob exist as part of the actual narrative for once. Like, I guess Clerks, they're like real creatures like, of that
space.
But they're
really functioning within the narrative. Like, I mean, Jay's the one who turns
Jay face
Bartleby
to face
into
with
a
God.
Human. Yeah.
Why is this bitch Jay's not talking? Blah, blah. Like, what? They're doing,
he still doesn't know what's going on.
They're
Why
doing
the
their
fuck
exact
did you hug
bit,
my head?
But yeah, they're doing their bit, but it's amplified because they fit so perfectly into the story of the film. A film that is not them just leaning in front of a convenience store selling drugs, right? Like,
well, they're not.
This is where I think we really establish them as, you know, they are the cornerstone in the pop culture takeaway.
They are truly characters in the movie. They're not just like side bits. Like, I think that's like, they're not D-plot characters. They are like inherently, they're intrinsically valued because they are, quote, prophets, but also because they are on this journey as well. Like, it's a discovery for everybody. Jay obviously is completely oblivious almost the entire time to what's actually going on. But, like, that's part of the charm. Like, that's part of the bit.
But
that's fine.
That's why I think the R2-D2 C-3PO connection is, like, actually pretty powerful. Bob doesn't talk, but Bob does know what's going on. And Bob leads Jay through it. Jay only wants to fuck. That's not really what C-3PO was about. But he is the C-3PO because he's always on something else that's unimportant.
I don't know. As we see, I think maybe sex is the most important thing.
Yeah.
I think this
and,
movie teaches
I wish
us
that they had left a little bit of wiggle room to maybe think that that the next that the last
This
Scion
also.
is Jay's kid. Just a little
This
wiggle
one
room, just a little
also.
space between when he's trying to have
Whoa.
sex and when she
Oof.
comes back.
That's
This
true.
one
They were offered some
also.
puss. That's what the movie was
This one
saying.
also is my favorite Kevin Smith smoke take, because that's what I call his like his exhales.
Buffy was
Because when
black.
he finally starts making fun of him for watching John Hughes movies, which I can't even watch anymore because this tubby bitch. That's my favorite smoke take of Kevin Smith. This just exasperate, like, how dare you? Pretty in Pink is beautiful.
It's fucking righteous, dude. Let's talk about some
It's
other
so good.
characters. Alan Rickman, perfection in this movie.
Absolutely.
If there was a voice of God, he's who I'd want it to be.
I think so too.
He's so fucking good, man. The entrance of the Metatron is awesome. It is kind of fascinating to be like, how the fuck did they get Alan Rickman for this movie? Right? Like, it is one of those things. It's like, of all the people in the movie, if you recast them, this is the one that feels like it would hurt the movie the most to me. He brings a gravitas that I think is valuable to the film.
I think this is what I came to on how Alan Rickman got to this movie. It's the thing that you don't think about, but Alan Rickman does everything. Alan Rickman likes silly movies. Alan Rickman was in Galaxy Quest.
Good point. Good
Die
point.
Hard is not the most serious movie of all time. Neither is fucking Harry Potter. He just brings gravity to what he's in.
Yeah. He's so fucking good, man.
I think if you've done enough costume dramas, like I think it's five. If you do five costume
None
dramas, you're considered a
of
serious
this Robin
actor.
Hood shit.
And it's the British accent too. Oh yeah, and he's goofy as hell in Robin Hood. I love him in
Yeah,
Robin Hood.
dude.
I want
But
to
I
cut
think
his
if you
hog
do,
out
if
with a
like,
spoon.
if you have five costume dramas under your belt, you're considered a like really seasoned actor, and therefore you
You're a
can do
real
this stuff and
actor.
bring like gravitas.
Yeah, he's in the Robin Hood movie where Robin Hood has an American accent.
Yeah, he's in Robin Hood starring Kevin Costner, so you know, fine.
Nottingham Field of
Yeah, and
Dreams,
he's
yeah.
in that movie, not to belabor on this movie, but in Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves, he's playing it as a farce. Like, there's this
Yeah.
whole thing where he's like trying to chase around Maid Marian to have sex with her, and he's like unbuckling his pants, and then he doesn't know how to use a sword, and like
I
he's a
built the
goofball.
bed and now I want to come.
I don't think they got him. I think they gave him the script, and he's like, "This is great. I'm gonna do
You
this."
know that Jason Lee was originally supposed to be Loki.
Jason Lee was? That actually makes perfect
He would have made
sense.
a great Loki.
It is weird because I do feel like he's a bit above Asriel. Like I think he could have been, but
He was
Loki, like
doing another
Damon and Affleck
movie,
just have
so
that.
he could only
Like
do
they're both
Asriel.
so good looking, right? They're both kind of at the peak of their like new young powers, and they're fucking like perfect in
I mean,
this
they're
movie.
really
They do
good. Like,
old
they're so
marriage
good,
scenes
and
are better than
that
a lot
fucking
of
movie
people could have done together.
scene in the
That
like
movie scene
corporate
is,
meeting room, I still think that's like a top five Kevin Smith scene.
I
It's
think so
so
too.
fucking good.
The two of them are so good. Bartleby is letting Loki do this. He doesn't think it's necessary, but he's just like, he's gonna whine the whole trip if he doesn't get to kill some people, so fine, let's do it. And like he like cuts him off at every turn when he's trying to be cool. The two of them do such a good old married couple. You can tell that the two actors have known each other since they were kids. And so it
Yeah.
feels like
They
these
play
two
off each other
characters
really
have known
well.
each other for thousands of years.
Yeah. They've been stuck
What?
together for a long time. And then again, so the movie scene is amazing. I love that fucking payoff in the garage. We kind of hit on it earlier. But when Bartleby finally is, you know, because at first he's just like a guy. He's like, well, of course, this is a loophole. We got to do it. When you see the foaming rage that comes out of Affleck, right? Where he's like, I've been fucking wronged. And I think that's the other side of the religious argument that this movie was kind of missing at the point, right? Is there's a lot of like Bethany is this very downtrodden, like, why me? Why me? Why me? But she has a base belief in this shit, right? Like she knows this and she
Absolutely.
still goes to church. She's kind of the demographic, right? But to
This is almost
watch what
validating to her.
Yeah, exactly, right? She's like, okay, it was worth something, right? For him to be a person who's actually stood in the presence of God. That foaming anger, that we had one moment of weakness and we've had to suffer all of this, and how they feel the pain every day that God built into them, apparently, that they have to feel the suffering of not being in God's presence all the time. And you see him turn and you see that rage.
Yeah.
And those two fucking deliver on that scene, right? Like, they fucking crush. I know there's a lot of debate about, like, how good of an actor Affleck actually is. And I'm not saying he's like a Daniel Day-Lewis. But, I mean, he fucking got us there. I think that scene is so fucking good.
And the one thing he doesn't say out loud, but you can feel inside of him, is when he says, "You sound like Lucifer, you've lost it." He's saying, like, don't go there. Because, like, within their own, when they were part of this shit, like, that's persona non grata. You don't talk about that guy. But the one thing he doesn't say about out loud is maybe Lucifer was right.
Yeah.
And that's, he's just like,
he's like, I get it now.
Fuck all
he's
this.
He's like, I get it.
Why have we been just standing in the same place for 4,000 years? Because daddy told us to.
Yeah.
And our punishment is we don't get to be around him. I don't care if the world is going to end.
They also lived in Wisconsin, so we're literally reading the papers about Dahmer, and they're like, well, God created this fucking guy, and just because we argued with him, we're stuck here forever. Like, you know, it makes sense, and it's another one of those, like, big biblical hard problems, which is, if God's all-powerful and there's no free will and all that kind of shit, was Lucifer really that bad, or is he just, like, a fucking plot device? You know what I mean? And so I think that I do love that in this movie, that the heavenly abstracts and all that, they've got fucking beef with God. His, like, most pure creations are like, this person, this entity does not always get it right. And I think that's kind of when the movie shifts. And it's like, oh, okay, we're really, like, building to a climax
now
instead of this kind of, like, Cheech and Chong ride along. And I think for those two to deliver that scene as well as they did, I think is what lets that finale pay off in a big way.
There's a deleted scene where Jason Lee says hell, when it was first created, was just an absence of God, which is a lot for an angel. But then when you assholes started to come in and say, please punish me, you made it an untenable place, a place that I would be willing to destroy all of the universe for. And I wish that there was that scene was still in there, because the movie is a celebration of faith, but it's also an indictment on the church.
Yeah.
It's and so that scene really clinches it, which is just like this idea that you do the things that you were going to do anyway, and you think saying I'm sorry or feeling bad about it makes you a good person, even though you've done bad things.
Yeah.
It's exhausting. Fuck you, human beings.
Well, it's also, you know, Satan was the guy, right? The brightest angel, the brightest star. He goes down and he has to just think absence. And then all of a sudden God's like, and now your roommates are Hitler, fucking Dahmer, all these guys. And Satan's like, this is what you fucking think I am?
I wrote this short comic that I haven't done anything with yet. That's just like the opening is just a guy dies. He wakes up. He's in hell. And Satan is just like, all right, buffet's over there. Your room's going to be over here, blah, blah, blah. And he's just like, blah, blah, blah. And he goes, why does everybody do that? What are they saying about me up there?
I was a pretty good dude. I know, ignore that whole War on the Thrones thing. I was a pretty good guy. Also, the fact that that many people followed Lucifer, right?
Well, the whole idea was it's just that Satan doesn't believe in dictatorship and prefers democracy.
Well, we see how that's going.
And so hell's a democracy.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it is funny because Jason Lee is my favorite Kevin Smith actor. I do kind of wish he had a bigger part in it than Asriel, but I think he makes his scenes count pretty well, right? Like, really the only, like, good Asriel scene is in the bar at the end, right? I don't know. Do you guys wish that Jason Lee had been deployed a little differently in this movie?
Other than he very much is accurate in saying that Central Air is one of the greatest things that ever happened.
Oh, the same, dude. That is a Griffey family truism.
No, that is greater.
Griffey's run hot. I get it. But I'm saying, even that scene, right? Like, I did wish there was a little more, and maybe that's not the point of the movie, but maybe a little more presence from the opposition party. I thought Jason Lee could have had a little more meat on the bone. I think the whole movie is kind of presenting arguments, so you don't need the like hell part represented as much. I don't think the movie is truly about like heaven versus hell, but us versus our absentee father.
He didn't join Satan. I mean, a lot of like this stuff about this is definitely an indictment of Catholicism, but very much an indictment of the Old Testament, because it's just like, you see what he did to Bartleby and Loki. You see what he did to Asriel. Asriel just didn't want to fight. He was a pacifist, more or less. I don't even know if the kind of son of a bitch he is right now is how he was back then.
Yeah.
He just didn't want to do it. He didn't have an opinion. And yeah. God punished him for it.
Yeah, it's great because he has a great beat in there, right? Jason Lee's kind of holding court. He's talking shit. The golf club death, whatever. It's fine. Cardinal Glick blessing his club. So that's fun. We had to get to the church, so I get it. But if there was one thing in the movie that I wish was different, right? And a movie that I would say is pretty nearly exactly what it needed to be. I wish Jason Lee had gotten a little more run. Like, there's a certain part of me, like, once they meet in that fucking toy store, like, he could have joined their, like, little traveling band and been with them, almost as the, devil on the shoulder, proverbially. I love Jason Lee in the role, but we get so little of it.
That would have been good. Like, where Bartleby is sort of like...
Asriel could have deployed more history, I think. That's something I would have liked to have heard, is more of the conversation about what life was like before the war on the throne, that kind.
Yeah, and maybe it's a misstep, because if you have Asriel influencing them too much, it takes away the angels' choices on how they're getting more militant.
Yeah,
but I don't know. That's like my one critique of the movie. That, and then I guess at the ending, I'll say this: I've always said the creepiest God movie of all time is It's a Wonderful Life.
Yeah.
I think this is the creepiest on-screen God has ever been. I think the concept of this God is fucking horrifying. Like, it seems like fun and games throughout the movie, right? But we do this kind of cool, like, I love the shit in front of the church when the angels, you know, rip their fucking metal tits out and they've got the wings and they're killing everyone, right? I think all that's great, right? The shooting the wings off, all that's fucking fun. I don't know about you guys, when God deploys in this movie, I was like, this is fucking terrifying. Like, really, truly terrifying.
So, for me, I really do like the idea of a God that's playful and whatever, just a nymph creature who just, like, really digs it here. But that's just what she looks like at the moment, because...
That's how we can process her... visual.
Blowing up Bartleby's head after he repents, isn't that your thing? He repents. He says, "I'm so sorry."
See, and I saw that. I don't know about you. I saw that as she led him back into heaven. Do you think Bartleby and Loki get back into heaven?
I feel like it's. I don't
know.
Or
do they go to hell?
They go to hell.
I don't think
they got to go to hell.
They did never cross the threshold of the church, so they have a ton of human murders on their souls.
No, I don't disagree with that, but I think that this is like, this is something that I thought about this too. I think she may be, I think God, in an act of mercy, because this is like, you know, this is that moment. You ask, you say, "I'm sorry." Like, you're asking for forgiveness from God themselves. And so I think a real act of mercy is to erase them from existence. So rather than their souls going anywhere, just obliterating
control
them from existence.
Control, delete, huh? Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, like,
well, it is funny because it's paired
that's a pretty optimistic view of it.
Yeah,
you can
she's
view
looking
Heather
right at
hell.
One of her creations and all of its fucking rough edges. As Jay's like, "Who's this fucking bitch?" And she's okay with that. Like, she's telling us specifically she made Jay and loves him for exactly what he is. The angels, I always wonder what the fuck happens to them. It feels like if she sends him to hell, that's.
I think that
not
so
a playful,
I always saw
cute
it
God
as
that we're getting at
humans.
The end of this.
They died as humans after going against God.
Yeah.
So they go to hell.
Essentially, yeah,
they
they're
can't go to
fanatics who have
heaven.
just murdered like 50 people.
If they're allowed back into the whole deal is if they're allowed back into heaven.
Yeah.
Wait, okay. If
Well,
they're
if
allowed
she
back into
allows
heaven,
them and
that
not some
repeals
kind
it.
of dogmatic loophole, if God makes the choice, God's all powerful. God can rewrite it as they want.
That would be fun if it looks
That's
like
a
she's
much
about to.
that is more of the playful God we get at the end. There's also a
Sure.
part of me, right? Like Bethany's bleeding everywhere, right? Bob's crying. The angels' heads have been exploded. And she's just doing somersaults. And I was like, we just went on a pretty harrowing journey, right? There are shit monsters. All these poor guys who just went to a strip club at 1 p.m. are now murdered. Like, there's a housewife somewhere in New Jersey who had central air who's now murdered.
But I think
And
she
God's
undid
just
all that.
somersault. Like, when Bethany's
I
in the
think she
hospital,
un yeah, I
that
think she
camera
did she
never
undo it
pans
or
to
did
the
she just
fucking
move the
burn ward
bodies?
or the dead baby's board. I was like, this is fucking scary that God just doesn't seem to give a shit about any of it.
Well, I thought
Okay,
that
but
she undid everything that
yeah,
happened.
I
So
think she resets everything.
anything that happened
Well, she
while
cleared
she's
the
out,
bodies. You think all those people come back alive?
the
I
wax
think
on,
so.
wax off
I
conversation
guess that
is,
makes sense. She could erase the news footage and all that. That also asks the questions, hey, if you're taking such an authorial hand, there's a lot of other shit, I'm guessing, within a 5 mile radius that we should
Well,
fix up to.
but
I
you're
mean,
asking.
let's get weirded with it, but all that's part of her plan. Anything that happened while she was out is not part of God's plan. So
Oh, I
just
see.
reverse anything that I didn't intend to happen.
But see, that's the problem with God. That's the fucking rough part that this movie is pretty good about dodging, is that God at some point knew they were gonna get fucking skee-balled in the body of Harold from Harold and Maude. Bud Cort represent. One of my all-time favorite movies. It was nice to see Bud Cort. So God knew this was gonna happen. Right? God wanted this to happen so that they could start the next Jesus birth, right?
No.
Yeah, this is maybe though. I mean, that's the thing, is like mysterious way, blah, 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 blah. So it's possible.
One of the great loopholes of all time. God works in mysterious ways. I love that.
But no. Okay, so the fact that Bethany got hurt,
Yes.
and she had to reverse that doesn't sound like it was something that was planned on. But then again, this is the weird thing that you get into with God, because it's
Yes.
Satan and demons and whatever, but God created those too, and has just as much control, created hell and has just as much control over demons as he does anybody else. And I think in the end, you always have to go to this thing of God's, this is all God's big ant farm, and God is bored and God is old. God is bored and God is old. And
So
so
old, yeah.
he wants to play with their toy. What would happen if I wasn't around? What would you guys do?
That actually tracks pretty spot on with the God we see in this movie. I think I was unprepared because when I saw it young, I was just like, fucking A, Alanis Morissette, this movie rules. When I watched it
am
now,
here for
right?
you.
Yeah, now I'm like a middle-aged man with a family. I'm at that weird, like, turning into an old guy thing where you're just like, what kind of world are my kids gonna live in? You know, that kind of shit. AI's coming for everything. There's something about watching this whole movie and then see that God just like doesn't give a shit, is like pretty unbothered and loving everything. That just was really unsettling to me. But you can't have the other version in this movie. That's not the movie we're writing. And
But I
to your
also
point
don't
with the
know if,
Bible
like,
in this movie and shit, there's going to be cracks when it's humans writing about things that are above our pay grade.
I do like the Alanis Morissette song they chose to end the movie. This
Good
is the
song.
first time I ever paid attention to the lyrics, but it's just like, I am all the terrible things that humanity does.
It wasn't quite
I
as
see
good
you
as
cheering on war. I see you ignoring your children, and I love you still. This
wasn't
is.
quite as good as City
Damn,
of
that's
Angels
awkward.
Needle Drop Uninvited.
Oh,
Callback.
yeah. City of Angels episode is the perfect pairing for this episode.
Yeah, it is.
It's
This is another good one, yeah.
another
It's
god
like
that
a
just
Nick
doesn't
Cage joins
quite have
Bartleby and Loki and really goes metal on the end and they beat God.
another god that doesn't quite seem to understand the true bureaucracy of his governing bodies,
Yeah,
but yeah.
Sipowicz tells you that the way that you transubstantiate the human form is by jumping off of a building. The wings are a metaphor. You don't actually have wings. You have a trench coat about to shoot up a
We're
school
here to find giant tits and all you can eat buffets, pal. That's all we're here to
She's
do.
She's a little skinny for my days, but you know, I'll go to a Sizzler then, later. I'll be fine. It's all good. Don't worry about it.
These two movies are a conversation with each other about what an angel is, because one says an angel doesn't have free will. The other says that they do. But clearly angels do have free will, or else how did Satan happen? How does Bartleby and Loki happen?
I think that,
when he says they don't have free will. I think
City of Angels, you have free will, but when you have your first ejaculation, God's going to murder the person
God's
you gave up heaven
take
for.
Take that person.
God's going to run them over with a logging truck.
I think all the angels are just indoctrinated to believe that they don't have free will because God told them that. But clearly, you can go on a road trip from Wisconsin to... they stay here for thousands of years because God said you have to stay in Wisconsin. The day that they chose not to, I guess, is when God wasn't around, but they just left.
There's no punishment. Yeah, the angels are just not go-getters. That's what we learn in this movie. They're just
go-getters. You were saying something about what's going on with the other religions. I did like that they named him Loki because he came here 4,000, 6,000, however long ago, years ago. And he was the angel of death, so he would come in and he would fuck everything up. Did the Norse people see him and know his name and just call him the
Don't go to Wisconsin, he's scary,
the god of whatever, the trickster god,
mischief?
Yeah,
there's something to that. All right, one more thing I wanted to get to. The Golgothan has become one of those very publicly maligned movie moments by Kevin himself, right? The rubber poop monster is what he's reduced this movie to a lot when interviewing.
Sure.
I don't think it's that bad.
I don't really think it's that bad.
I like the
Golgothan scene.
I've never
I thought
had
it was a cool, like,
it.
Little extra like layer of mythology. The ending might not be great. The CG hasn't aged great. I think it's fine. I don't know why. It's one of those things Kevin does. It's part of his, like, whole personality is he just talks shit on everything he makes constantly to the point that sometimes it drives me nuts. And it's like, dude, do you know how much your movies mean to all of us? Can you fucking stop talking shit about it? Like,
he
we're idiots for
to
liking your movies
too much. Cause he still says Clerks is an amazing movie. Cause other people say that he just listens to other people.
Yeah. Kevin has his heart on his sleeve. I see that. But if he hears this, I want him to know.
Yeah.
I still like the Golgothan. I think it's a really cool addition to the film.
It's a good piece of the film.
It's a good extra bit of mythology. The rubber suit is awesome.
Who cares?
The rubber suit is awesome. What are we talking about here?
Please. We just watched End of Days, which also has some dog shit CGI. So who cares?
I had this movie on VHS, so I never knew what the Golgothan was saying. And I had it on subtitles this last time. And it... of no mother born. I am from your bowels. I am shit. I love it.
That's fucking hardcore.
That's fucking
And
harsh,
it's happening
man.
In a strip club with Salma Hayek. I was like, dude, this movie knew exactly where I was. It's a movie about religion, but they know what I needed to see as
Salma
a young
Hayek
man.
Salma Hayek somehow knows how to say those lines and make them sound great.
She's awesome.
Thieves and prisoners and rapists. And blood and violent features
she's
were
so
still
good.
In the process.
I mean, she's just the best.
Okay, so if we were to look at this, like, Jay and Silent Bob has the most famous people in it. Is this the best cast as a total unit in any
Bar
Kevin
none.
Smith movie?
Bar none.
It is an ensemble, unlike any other Kevin Smith movie ever. Every other Kevin Smith movie has a main character. This one doesn't, because Bethany is a stand-in for the audience. She's not a main
character.
It's just the best. It's such a solid cast, and everyone.
That's what I'm saying. Like,
feeds
who doesn't
each other
deliver
really
in this
well.
Movie? Who's not great in this movie?
But
you get your Ryan O'Halloran cameo is Bernie Hicks or whatever the news guy.
Everybody interacts with each other so well. Like, it's not this like
They're
one
so
person
good.
Is better than the other. Just everybody's just coming together. It's
It's sort of the Bernie Hicks or whatever. The thinking about Clerks too, and just like his. His cousin is like this news anchor. I guess he's dead now. Or maybe not. Maybe he's back.
He's at Thanksgiving dinner. He's like, news flash. Dante's still working at the Quick Stop. And he's like, fuck you, Brian. Fuck you, Gil.
Fuck you, Bernie. Fuck you.
You think you're so fucking cool because you do stand-ups? Fuck you.
And then his other cousin,
Gil.
Mr. Did they come or what? Just wants to
Gil,
eat.
The MTV guy. The O'Halloran family Thanksgiving is pretty wild. No, I think if you look at, again, I think that the personal argument with God to me is less sharp than the personal relationship story of Chasing Amy. To me, I think that's the only distinction where I would still maybe say Chasing Amy. But as a production, this is as good as Kevin ever did. Mm-hmm. This is the best total cast that Kevin ever had. And I also think it's probably, I wouldn't say it's his best written script, but it's probably his most insightful. And the way he layers the comedy in is masterful at this point. So I mean, these two back to back, this is where Kevin Smith became the guy. Right. Yeah. This is where you're like, this is a filmmaker.
I think this is that graduate. This is that
graduation.
To be reckoned
with for a long time. And then, you know, he took yet another path. That's what he does. But
this is the level up movie, though.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I think if you.
And now we're about to slide down real fast.
We're going to fucking Looney Tunes it up. I love Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back. But that's also a movie that's not interested in being in the running with Dogmen Chasing Amy as like great pieces of cinema. It's just a fucking fun movie. But yeah, I think that'll always be the two that are fighting for the top spot based on your personal flavor, man. Chasing Amy and Dogma, I think, are his two peak movies for sure.
Just depends on the day. That's all.
Depends on the day. All right. Anything else before we get out of here?
Booby Trim.
Emma Thompson was actually going to be God.
Oh. That's
I don't
fun.
Think you need to pull the Emma Thompson gun out if you're not going to have her fucking say anything.
There's a
also Albert Brooks was offered Cardinal Glick.
That would have been something awesome.
Wait, who was
Albert Brooks?
He would have been incredible. Been really, although I think Carlin crushes,
and because he
also
loved
one
the
of the
X-Files.
Best pieces of fake merchandise that Kevin Smith ever made was the Buddy Christ for sure.
Oh yeah,
and also because he loved the X Files, the role of Bethany was originally offered to Gillian Anderson, who said she hated it and passed immediately.
That doesn't surprise me, but if there is a weakness in the movie, I don't think that Bethany is the best part of the movie.
Last factoid. That was it.
But yeah. In the commentary for this movie, Kevin Smith talks about how much he didn't get along with the actress.
Linda Florentino or what? Yeah. Apparently that was like a pretty big...
Laments not putting Janine Garofalo as that character. And I think Janine Garofalo would have made a great Beth.
It's funny you
Garofalo
say this.
Garofalo is like really underappreciated, I feel
it's
like.
It's funny. So I was reading because I always do like the Wikipedia read. So this came up. He didn't have any problem with Linda Fiorentino, anything like that. That thing that he says, because it's the one scene you have with Janine Garofalo, because he says like, oh man, she should have been the lead. Now, flippant remark, he didn't mean anything by it other than Janine Garofalo did a nice job. All of us have misconstrued this for like 20 years, thinking that that was what he was trying to get at.
Well, shit. Again, in the commentary, at the end of the movie, there are little outtakes, and Linda Fiorentino smiles at the camera, and he says, oh, the one time she smiled the entire shoot. No. We're not rewriting history.
God is rewriting his story.
Kevin Like God is trying to rewrite history. He has said in other interviews, he's like, I said some really shitty things in the commentary to be funny. It was not okay. Like, I did not have any problems with Linda Fiorentino.
I'm all for Kevin growing up and saying mea culpas for when we make mistakes.
She apparently reached out to him after he had the heart attack, and he was like, I felt really bad about what I had said all those years ago. Like, you were wonderful, and I don't think that you.
Well, that's good, man. I'm glad they're all back. But I don't know, man. Just a fucking stunning movie. Our next movie, Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back, will be a Patreon exclusive feature length commentary. Come watch cartoons with us over on patreon.com/filmalchemistpod. Jay, tell the people where to find you.
At Jay Rollins, art everywhere. And stay tuned for, what is the book called? I finished drawing it like a year ago. whatever. Go to Jay Rollins Art on X. Or whatever it's called, and you'll find the books that I'm making.
You'll find it there.
If Jay remembers, we'll put it in the show notes.
A ringing endorsement.
Yeah. Written by Jeff Ryder, who is awesome. It's about a chef who is also a wizard. It's great.
That sounds exactly up my alley.
That's
all right, everyone. That's it for us. We'll see you next time on Patreon.
Kismet.